Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2438, with the release date of Friday, July 19th, 2024, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The ARRL provides details about the recent cyber attack. NASA discovers a possible new factor causing radio signal disruptions. And a tribute to the Apollo 11 mission promises hams the moon. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2438 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Charleston, West Virginia, here's Jim Dameron, NATMW.
Our top story this week revisits the security breach at ARRL headquarters this past spring. The ARRL has provided a public official in New England with more details about what happened, and Andy Morrison, K9AWM, shares them with us now.
In a letter that appears on the Attorney General's website for the state of Maine, the ARRL has acknowledged that the attack on the league's computer system this past spring was accomplished through the use of sophisticated ransomware that gained access to the personal and confidential data of as many as 150 of its employees. The letter said the ransomware was deployed by an unauthorized third party, which the letter did not identify. The data breach was described as having left the league's computer system encrypted. The message from league CEO David Minster, NA2AA, appears as a downloadable file on the Attorney General's website. The website lists July 1st as the date of the CEO's letter. His letter recaps the hacking incident that occurred in mid-May, noting that the league took its affected systems offline, secured its network, and called in forensic specialists. Although the ARRL does not store personal or credit card data from league members, the CEO acknowledged that staffers' personal information, including their social security numbers, may have been exposed, saying that, quote, data security is one of our highest priorities, end quote. The letter offered employees 24 months of identity monitoring services at no charge. The league assured employees, however, that there was no evidence so far that any of their personal data has been misused. This is Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
The FCC has charged 13 landlords in the New York City area in connection with illegal radio broadcasting. Cell MB KB3TZD has that report.
13 New York area property owners have been put on notice by the Federal Communications Commission, which is charging them with permitting individuals to engage in illegal radio broadcasts. The properties were identified by the FCC as being in Manhattan, Brooklyn, the Bronx, and Spring Valley, which is north of New York City. The FCC also sent notices to landowners in Newark and Irvington, New Jersey, to the city's immediate west. The enforcement action taken on July 11th was done under the Pirate Act, which strengthens the agency's powers of sanction and sets higher penalties for violations. An FCC press release said that if the property owners continue to permit illegal radio activity, they could face fines of as much as $2.4 million. The acronym stands for Preventing Illegal Radio Abuse Through Enforcement Act, which took effect in April of 2021. This is Cell MB, KB3TZD.
Hams in western Pennsylvania are mourning the death of a key member of the emergency communications system who was also a friend and mentor. We have details about his life and contributions from Travis Lisk, N3ILS.
A devastating tornado charted the course of the amateur radio career of John Franklin Cole, N3TN, who is known to his friends as Frank. The tornado swept through Beaver County, Pennsylvania in 1985, 3 years after Frank became licensed. That same tornado swept Frank's radio future in the direction of community service, and he devoted himself to helping get the word out in emergencies. Frank became a silent key on Wednesday, the 10th of July. Throughout his years on the air, Frank served as the ARES emergency coordinator for Beaver County and was active as a RACES officer. He belonged to the Beaver Valley Amateur Radio Association and the AAA Amateur Radio Association, Inc. His longtime friend Eddie, KB3YRU, said that his deep, resonating voice could be heard often on many nets throughout the region. A final radio call for Frank was held at the start of the Western Pennsylvania phone traffic net on Friday, the 12th of July. Eddie told Newsline, quote, "Frank always had a story to tell, and now we will carry his stories on as we share them with others," end quote. Frank was 77. This is Travis Lisk and 3ILS.
A new adventure will begin on the 27th of July for the young radio operators who are part of the Dave Coulter Memorial Youth DX Adventure. The young amateurs will be using the special event call sign K3Y on the HF bands during the RSGB IOTA contest that weekend. For the second consecutive year, they'll be hosted by the K3LR Contest Group Station in Western Pennsylvania, one of the world's largest contest stations. The youth team will be Ian, KI8NA, and Lily, W8LIL. They'll be accompanied by youth mentors Katie, KE8LQR, and Grace, KE8RJU. A press release from the Youth DX Adventure organization said there were housing issues this year for the team's planned international trip. For details, visit youthdxa.org. Although new ham license conditions have been in effect in Great Britain since February, some of the regulators' changes are still baffling to many amateurs. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has a report about a new video designed to make things clearer.
5 months ago, Ofcom put new license conditions in place for radio amateurs in the UK, affecting a range of factors including call signs and power limits. Hams who are still uncertain about the impact of these changes can get a fuller explanation by watching a new video summary released by the Radio Society of Great Britain. Available on both the website and the YouTube channel of the RSGB, the video looks at changes for foundation licensees, including the ability to operate their stations remotely via the internet, and the privilege granted to unlicensed persons to operate under supervision of a license holder. The 3-minute video also explores the next changes Ofcom has planned. Follow the links in this week's AR Newsline script to see the video. This is Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
Parks on the Air's summer edition of Support Your Parks Weekend arrives on the 20th and 21st of July, and the bands are likely to be busy with activators and chasers. This is one of POTA's 5 official events conducted throughout the year. The next Support Your Parks Weekend will be October 19th and 20th. Participants in Support Your Parks Weekend events are eligible for downloadable certificates. We amateurs aren't the only people who sometimes scratch our heads over the bizarre behavior of the ionosphere. Even the experts at NASA have their moments of doubt. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, tells us why.
The images of 2 oddly shaped ionospheric plasma bubbles have been captured by a NASA spectrograph project, and scientists are saying they may be tied to disruptions in radio communications. They are hoping for a better understanding of these electrically charged shapes and why they occur in their search for clues into how to make radio communications more resilient during disturbances such as major solar storms. The images of these rarely seen shapes were captured by a NASA mission known as Global Scale Observations of the Limb and Disk, known by the acronym GOLD. GOLD is a 2-channel spectrograph launched 6 years ago with a mission to capture images of ionospheric weather. NASA scientists believe that the storm activity in the ionosphere created the oddly shaped plasma bubbles they saw. GOLD has captured them previously, but only during extreme space or terrestrial disturbances. They are shaped like the letter C, or its reverse, and sometimes like the letter X. They typically form near the magnetic equator of our planet. Normally, plasma bubbles are long and straight, leading scientists to believe these odd shapes are the result of forces such as terrestrial winds. This is Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the K7 ECI repeater of the Elmore County Amateur Radio Club in Mountain Home, Idaho, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. local time. Ham radio lecturer and educator Dan Romancheek, KB6NU, came to New York City to help those in the hacker and STEM steam community blaze a trail into amateur radio. By the time he had finished teaching his one-day course, Ham Radio for Hackers, on July 13th, 25 hackers had passed the technician test. The Hackers on Planet Earth, or HOPE, conference turned out to be a right place for nurturing amateurs along this non-traditional path to radio. Ed, N2XDD, and Nicole, AD2IM, who were part of the volunteer examiner team, told Newsline that the new licensees included a 9-year-old girl. They said they shared Dan's hope that the worlds of hackers and hams will continue to merge successfully. CW Ops in New Zealand are getting ready for a repeat performance of a successful public demonstration held last year. Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, tells us what they've got planned.
Based on their successful demonstration of a CW radio station last year at the Museum of Transport and Technology in Western Springs, members of the Franklin Amateur Radio Club and the NZNet are planning to do it again. When the visitors get on the air on the 18th of August, under the supervision of licensed hams, the message they will send will be a simple one, their own name, which they will send using a Morse key. As the signal goes out on 40 metres, Niels at L1NZ and Paul's at L1AJY will be listening and will respond by sending the person's name back to them. Peter Henderson's at L1PX, president of the Franklin Amateur Radio Club, told Newsline that the popular event grew out of a request from the museum itself after staffers noticed that the most popular exhibit in the Telecom Exhibition Centre was the Morse code key and buzzer. The museum had told Peter last year that many families stopped to try out and to practice sending messages. That's what inspired the idea of a live on-the-air event. Peter reported about the last year's event in the NZNet newsletter of the New Zealand CW Net, saying, quote, "I can't think of a nicer way to spend a Sunday," end quote. With luck, this year's event will be a repeat of another nice Sunday. Meanwhile, he said, a much larger version of the event is in the planning stages for October at a steam train attraction. This is Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
A de-expedition team is getting ready to operate from Canada's St. Paul Island, and it might be the last visit for a while, according to Dave Parks, WB8ODF.
A windswept, environmentally sensitive, treeless island in Canada is about to become home to a team of 10 de-expeditioners. They'll be getting on the air on the 26th of August and remain until the 5th of September. This is the St. Paul Island CY9C de-expedition, which has been granted access to the island by the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans for this short window of time. The island, which is off the coast of Nova Scotia in the Cabot Strait, has designations in three award schemes, POTA as CA0122, Lighthouse STP002, and IOTA NA094. This is a return trip for many on the team who will be focusing on CW, but also operating SSB, FT8, and RTTY. There'll also be satellite and moon bounce operations. The hams received a grant from the Northern California DX Foundation to help sponsor this de-expedition, which is still raising funds. According to the team, this is the most expensive CY9 de-expedition to date. The team writes on its webpage, quote, "This could well be the last CY9 St. Paul Island operation for many years to come," end quote. For details on the de-expedition, visit QRZ.com. This is Dave Parks, WB8ODF.
In the world of DX, listen for Haru JA1XGI operating as JA1XGI/6 from Minami Daito Island, IOTA number AS047, from the 21st through to the 23rd of July, using CW and FT8 on 40, 30, 20, 15, and 10 meters. He'll also be operating via the GreenCube satellite. QSOs will be uploaded to Club Log. Listen for special event station CR6B, which will conclude operation on the 21st of July, marking the 42nd International Motorcycle Rally in Faro, Portugal. Listen on 160 through 6 meters for CW, SSB, and the digital modes. QSL via CT1 EHX. INYO IW1RBI is using the call sign IS0/IW1RBI from Arbus, Sardinia, IOTA number EU024, until the 25th of July. INYO is operating holiday style and can be heard mainly using SSB on 80 through 6 meters, QSL via his home call. A team of five operators plans to be on the air as MM0UKI from the uninhabited group of Flannan Islands, IOTA number EU118, starting on 1 August. If weather permits, they'll be returning around the 4th of August. They'll be on 40 through 6 meters operating CW and SSB with three stations. Operators are Nobby G0VJG, John, G4IRN, Paul, G4PVM, Mike, GM5AUG, and Jamie, M0SDV. See QRZ.com for QSL details. Our final story celebrates the triumph of landing astronauts on the moon. These hams marked the occasion by landing images on the moon, as we hear from Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Every year since 2019, the 50-year anniversary of the Apollo moon landing, the EME-SSTV moon landing CUSO party has celebrated the achievement by transmitting and bouncing images off the surface of the moon. Doing EME on slow scan TV poses challenges. Radio operators need a strong signal and are always battling fast fading on the EME path, which results in missing pixels on the moon bounced image. Jan, PA3FXB, who was part of team PI9CAM, told Amateur Radio Newsline, "That's part of the fun." This year's PI9CAM moon bounce party was held Saturday the 13th of July using a 25-centimetre dish at the C.A. Mueller Radio Astronomy Station in the Netherlands. The date was chosen instead of the actual July 21 anniversary because the moon's position was more advantageous for EME contacts. Moon-related images that were sent by the station included a portrait of the Apollo 11 crew, their launch, and the lunar rover. Perhaps the most special image of all was that of a man who made it to the moon via radio long before Apollo 11, Alan Katz, K2UYH. Al was the founding father of Moon Bounce and the longtime publisher of the monthly EME newsletter. He became a silent key on June 20, age 81. Jan told Newsline, "He will be deeply missed." The transmission of the tribute to the moon mission and Al were a success. Jan said the images were received by the 5-metre dish of I0NAA. This is Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Don't forget the Amateur Radio Newsline Haiku Challenge. If you're not too busy tuning your antennas or chasing the latest de-expedition, pick up a pencil and share your experience by sending an original haiku to us here at Newsline. Use the entry form on our website, arnewsline.org, and please follow the rules for writing your 3-line haiku. We can't accept any entries that aren't written in traditional haiku form. Share with fellow listeners the poetry that's inspired by your ham radio experience. With thanks to Amateur News Daily, AMSAT, blog of Dan Romancheek, KB6NU, CQ Magazine, David Bihar, K7DB, DX World, Ed Wilson, N2XDD, Eddie Masherich, KB3YRU, 425DX News, FCC, Franklin Amateur Radio Club, Jan, PA3FXB, Jim Storms, AB8YK, Maine Attorney General, Nicole Adams, AD2IM, QRZ.com, Radio Society of Great Britain, shortwaveradio.de, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. We remind our listeners that Amateur Radio Newsline is an all-volunteer, non-profit organization that incurs expenses for its continued operation. If you wish to support us, please visit our website at arnewsline.org and know we appreciate you all. We also remind listeners, if you like our newscast, leave us a 5-star rating wherever you subscribe to us. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73. As always, thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2024, all rights reserved.